Welcome to the KPMG Emergency Management Dialogues podcast. In each episode, we sit down with emergency management and government leaders to dive into their compelling experiences, stories, and insights. Let's listen in.
Hello, everyone. My name is Ross Ashley. I'm a senior director here at KPMG, and I'm here today with Mark Garaducci, who is the former head of California's Office of Emergency Services and Homeland Security. Cal OES is one of the largest, most diverse organizations in emergency management that we have across the country. Mark spent from 2012 to 2023 responding to and managing some of the most complex and challenging disasters, to include some of the most catastrophic, to call them wildfires is a misnomer. They were urban fires that really took a lot out of California. And Mark led those efforts and has a vast amount of experience as a former firefighter and everything else out there. So Mark, thank you for being with us today. Greatly appreciate it.
Ross, happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right. Well, we're just going to have a little discussion here and talk about emergency management and some of the things that are going on today. And we started throwing this phrase around about recovering fast, but responding faster. And there's always been this tug of war kind of between getting things where they need to be, when they need to be there, but at the same time, ensuring that we're accounting for it properly for reimbursement purposes and that we're treating the federal taxpayers' dollars with respect, right? I mean, my time when I was at the Federal Emergency Management Agency in charge of grants, I would get called up to Capitol Hill and they say, Ross, you're not getting the money out fast enough. And then 12 months later, they call me back up to the Hill and go, Ross, you weren't a good steward of the taxpayers' dollars. You know, there's always that challenge there, but tell us some of the things that you were able to put into place to kind of help, whether there were parallel processes or pre-positioning or other types of pre-negotiations that you were able to do to help Cal OES in this area.
All really important points. I guess maybe I would like to start off by saying that the whole concept of emergency management has changed so dramatically, really the last 10, 15 years, and continues to evolve and change to this day, driven a lot by, you know, more extreme events that we're seeing across the country, driven a lot by weather kind of events, and resulting in multiple catastrophic kind of impacts. And it's really forced, I think, the need for emergency management to step back and, well, first of all, look at themselves as far as what their role is, how fast they respond to things, how fast they get engaged. But even before the response, I think, you know, and I just speaking from our side of the coin on this, is that it's all about what you do in advance of an event. And that means that you're leaning more forward today. Emergency management, I think in the past, as you go up the rungs, you know, the idea is you have the fire first responders that are responding. And then if something gets overwhelming for a local government or a local community, then they're going to go up to the next level and ask for assistance. And really, because of the speed and complexity of events and how fast they change in size and scope, and complexity, that time frame where you're waiting for somebody to call for help is a time that you need to be really leaning forward to be engaged. And really now it's one team, one fight, right? Everybody's got a lane, but everybody is supporting everybody. There's just not enough resources to go around in preparing for these things. And so, you know, leaning forward means communicating before the event, doing your as much mitigation and prevention preparedness before the event, getting good situational awareness of an event that's evolving, and possibly pre-positioning assets or engaging with your partners in other government agencies or other resources, both public and private. That all it makes it so that emergency management is much more dynamic, much more engaged. And therefore, by knowing what's happening and being engaged on the front end, as the disaster evolves and the engagement of emergency management broadens, that engagement, that connection with what's happening, makes a much more smoother transition and a much more enriched and efficient response. That said, through that process, you also, as one of the things we put in place in California, was this whole concept that response and recovery is not a consecutive, it's a concurrent action, right? And we built incident management teams within the State Operations Center and our field units to address that the recovery side of the house was directly involved and standing side by side with the response side to understand the dynamics of the event so that it could streamline into a recovery operation much faster. And that really was, like I said, driven by the fact that we were having so many very, very fast moving events that back to back, and so many communities were impacted. And, you know, it really changed the dynamic in the way we were doing business here. And I think we're starting to see that across the country as well.
I want to pull on that idea of leaning forward more, because, you know, it was really not until the passing of the post-Katrina Emergency Management Reform Act that the emergency management community had the ability to lead forward. I mean, there was always pre-planning and training and those kind of things taking place, but it was really after those reforms came into place that allowed, you know, with pre-disaster declarations and allowing that those engines to start up before disasters occurred, you know, also all the preparedness grants and the mitigation grants and all of that that has gone out has kind of led to that. But, you know, it took the military a long time to come up with a doctrine on how do you go from deliberate planning to crisis action planning, right? Where you go from training to actually war fighting, right? And I think we're still learning this in emergency management. Would you say that's a fair statement?
I would say it's a fair statement. I mean, the Reform Act was a game changer in a lot of ways, because it did sort of, people weren't more tied to how much is it going to cost me to respond and I don't have the resources to respond, and more focused on the event and the impact to the communities, right? And so, you know, they were like less encumbered by some concerns on financial bureaucratic actions and really leaning forward. But we're still learning through that process. I different places around the country, you know, still approach this. And I think that there's, it speaks to really more of a, I think, in my view, a need to continue to standardize the profession. You know, I think I can go to any fire department in the country and the tactics and the strategy are going to be pretty much the same, right? There's going to be uniquenesses around the event that they're dealing with, of course, but their baseline tactics and strategy are going to be the same. And I don't think we're there yet on emergency management. And I do understand, it's not lost on me, that emergency management is very complex and you know, nothing can generally be the same in each event. But there are certain, I think, standardization practices and consistencies that can help emergency management. And one of them is this whole concept of being present, being engaged early enough to get the totality of the situation. And, you know, maybe you're not doing anything quite yet, but you're ready to do something to streamline the process as it's moving forward. And that just takes a little bit more effort, takes change of protocols. You need to have a much better relationship with all the partners and entities, and understand that we're all on the team working to get the job done.
I agree with that standards part. I mean, if you look at law enforcement, you have reporting standards, whether it's, you know, national criminal, you know, NIBRS, the National Incident-Based Reporting System. You walk into a police department, it's done the same way from how many other jurisdictions we have across the country. Same thing with NFPA standards, with firefighters and things of that nature. We don't have a lot of that in emergency management, right? If you look at a debris load ticket in one jurisdiction, it's going to look completely different from a debris load ticket in another jurisdiction. All the way from that low level to the how emergency managers interact in their states, right? I mean, we just had elections here. And if you look at Indiana, the new incoming governor now is emergency management and homeland security used to be in a cabinet position. It's now being moved down under the Department of Public Safety. And the next administration may come back and undo that and do it over. So we end up with this not a consistent way of that whole of government interaction there. I mean, I don't know how we solve that problem other than, you know, the National Governors Association or something, but that it seems to be inconsistent everywhere you go.
Yeah, I concur. The National Governors Association and the National Emergency Management Association do put out guidance to governors and new governors that are coming in that speak to the importance of having emergency management placed in the right place, particularly at state government level, but even at county government levels. You know, even in California, it's kind of all over the map. Some are in county exec offices, some are working for the sheriff, some are working for the fire chief. you know, there is a complexity with that when that happens. That doesn't mean that everybody's not, the emergency manager not working very hard and being professional. Some places it works really good. But for example, if you're working for the sheriff, you know, I'll just use an example. When we had multiple wildfires taking place, we also had a significant amount of civil unrest going on at the same time. Sheriff's duties are focused in different places. Emergency management duties are focused in different places. Obviously, emergency managers are supposed to bring all of that together. It is something that is important. And I think a lot of it is a little bit still misunderstood with regards to our elected leaders about where emergency management, the importance of emergency managers, and how they are critical of bringing all the disparate pieces together to effectively respond to, you know, and recover from or mitigate disasters and emergencies. And being in a place where you can see, I often say from my time spent at Harvard State and Local Government, you know, you're either on the dance floor or you're on the balcony, right? And I think that sometimes on the dance floor, you have a very specific view of things. Emergency managers tend to be on the balcony and they're looking at this from a broader perspective. They can see all the people dancing on the dance floor and where the gaps and challenges are and bring that together. And putting an emergency manager in, you know, deep into an organization really makes it difficult to be on the balcony and be able to effectively do the job that they need to do.
Let me go in a little bit of a different direction here and get your take on something that a lot of folks have been talking about scope creep in emergency management, right? That the mission has become so broad. Yeah, I'm gonna paraphrase Craig Fugate, you know, former FEMA administrator. He says emergency management, he defines emergency management as when the org chart of government breaks and it has nowhere to go, it goes to emergency management, right? But it seems like in the last, let's call it last 5 years, last decade, the scope creep of what emergency management is doing is become so broad. I'll give you a good example. I was visiting a jurisdiction in California, and the local emergency manager was telling me that they had just hired two social workers inside the emergency management agency. Just kind of want to get your take on that. You know, a lot of this had to do with COVID. A lot of this has had to do with the housing crisis and things of that nature. You know, when I asked that same emergency manager about a regional sheltering plan and asked the emergency manager how that would affect the jurisdiction, the individual told me, I don't know, because I've been busy doing this other stuff. Right. Just want to get your kind of take on that. Is it seems like emergency managers today are taking on so much other than just the natural disasters or any kind of mass acts of aggression.
It's a fair point. I think that that's true. Community leaders, you know, when they're not sure where to go, you know, if it doesn't look like it fits in the fire department, it doesn't look like it fits in the law enforcement, you know, it is emergency management. You know, and I've seen a lot of variations as well. You know, emergency management organizations that have become more of a, you know, homelessness coordination center or housing support community, right? And I think that the principles that emergency management bring to the table of collaboration, coordination, being able to bring all the right players to the table are what really are those effective tools, those capabilities are what make people interested in bringing complex problems to emergency managers. I think overall, while I do agree with Craig, that, you know, it is sometimes there's too much going on in the emergency management and it basically dilutes their primary functions. I would also say that resourced properly or for a piece of something, like this happened to me several times in California, where I didn't take on a new program, but I was able to send a team in, or we went in, used the principles of emergency management to organize the capability, the effort, and then stepped away, you know. So we really helped our sister agencies and departments with the principles of emergency management, of being able to, you know, metrics driven, objective driven, time phased, you know, operational incident action planning, all of those things that are bread and butter to emergency management at scale can be applied to, you know, these other kinds of events. And, you know, I stood up task forces for fraud task forces for our EDD. I stood up cannabis enforcement task forces. But the idea was standing them up from the standpoint of helping those organizations that have primary responsibility, because they were bringing in so many other disparate organizations you're not used to working with. emergency management is used to working with multiple different kinds of agencies that aren't of the same like. And so bringing those principles to bear in other areas is really kind of what we tried to focus in on to try to minimize the amount of taking on more, building more within the emergency management function.
I think you hit on it. Partnership is key, right? I mean, it's the number one word for emergency management, right? Having those partnerships already in place. And obviously we saw that a lot during the pandemic with COVID and everything, and that where we saw emergency management and public health partnering together, you saw really, really good, effective things. When they worked independently, you saw some challenges. And I use the expression, the public health community is really good at putting a shot in an arm, but you really need to bring the emergency management community to bear if you're really trying to put 10,000 shots a day in arms, right? That's not what public health has been designed for, right? They're not scaled for that. They don't, you know, and where they work together inside their lanes, partnering, you really saw some really effective things. One person told me a story in the Mercedes Center in Atlanta, I think it's the Mercedes football facility there, that one individual came in and determined that if they inoculated the people that were giving the shots, if they put them in swivel chairs, you save 20 seconds. Now, 20 seconds doesn't sound like a lot, but when you're moving that many people through a facility, a swivel chair made all the difference in the world. It's those kind of things that, you know, emergency management understands logistics and understands so much of this that goes into pulling those communities together. And it's almost like if you take an independent agency, they do great. You put two agencies together, they're, unless there's a coordinating factor in there, some sort of coordinating body, they're going to fail, right? Working independently. And I think that's emergency management provides that kind of glue, if you will. Changing gears a little bit here. Also, let's talk a little bit about innovation. I mean, California's done some amazing things as it relates to whether it's wildfire warnings, earthquake warnings, tsunami warnings, and things. You just mentioned earlier when we were talking about an earthquake that happened earlier today, I think you mentioned.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I mean, well, let me say, you know, these events, the need to move to innovate, you know, obviously just we as a society are constantly in a state of change with regards to innovation. And we see that on a day-to-day basis. And, you know, emergency management, you know, just take the alert and warning aspects of what emergency management does. And, you know, how do you get a signal? How do you get an alert to an individual today? You know, there's a move to get off of people, you know, there's still a part of our generation that's used to having a hardwire phone, right? But the majority of population that are on the cell phones, right? And, you know, how do you, that changes a little bit of the dynamic because, you know, it's not like you have a hard wire into your house anymore. You're at a single point of communication that can, oh, by the way, only move voice communication. But now, you know, from a situational awareness standpoint, there's a need to empower the community. Events are moving so much faster and get complicated much faster. You know, you talk about what is the situation? What is the threat? What is the evacuation route that you need to take? All of this data is being moved to an individual today, right? And so that drives us for a need to innovate with regards to the tools that we're using in emergency management. And again, those tools that we're using are predicated and built around the principles that we use, you know, we've used always for a long time, paper and pencil in emergency management, but the whole action planning, multi-agency coordination, unified coordination sort of concept, right? We moved very rapidly, you know, really kind of started about 2013, 14. We've always had some level of innovation in California, but really it was after the drought. We had a multi-year drought. We could not get the data analytics we needed to be able to assess what was the impact of the drought, what was the demographic impact from the drought, what were we seeing with land subsidence, water delivery systems, et cetera. And so we really launched on a pivot on building common operating platforms and data analytics capabilities so we could help the emergency management community and by extension, state government and local government and the community at large understand what was happening, be able to effectively prepare for, respond to, or recover from. It also helped us create a narrative, right? Public communication, public education, and media relations to be able to better inform the public and what we were doing in a much more timely fashion. That continued to expand over the course of the last several years. We have advanced capabilities in fire detection, predictive analysis, the ability to look at weather data. We established what was called the Wildfire Threat Information Intelligence Center, which, you know, if you think National Hurricane Center, this was something similar to that at a smaller scale. But the idea was, is it was a collaborative effort of input from multiple sources, multiple agencies sitting around in this collaborative way to be able to take data. And my view at the time was, if we could see a hurricane evolving 5 days out and then could slowly do predictive analysis of where that hurricane was going to make landfall and what communities were going to be most impacted, why couldn't we do the same thing with fire weather evolving on the West Coast, right? And so we could, and we worked with the Weather Service, our fire meteorologists, data analytics, and then a lot of software companies. And now, you know, we can determine 5 days out or so what the most critical fire weather area of the state is going to be. We issue red flag warnings. If it's really critical, meets a metric, we will pre-position fire strike teams in that community so that they're there. So if a fire starts, they can get on it right away. And if it's really extreme, we'll pre-evacuate an area so that the firefighters are not worried about dealing with rescue, but they can focus on fighting the fire. So we've done quite a bit in this arena. We also have built in capabilities where now, you know, responders can see what's happening on their smartphone prior to getting to an incident. That helps for safety. It helps for planning, understanding the situational awareness. But mostly, we have worked extensively to build better public education and public relations, right? And that's been a game changer for us. Everything from implementing the nation's first earthquake early warning system, which literally can detect shaking before it reaches you and give you a warning. And then you could drop, cover, and hold. Or if it's in a manufacturing context, or say it's a train, trains coming down can be slowed or stopped prior to the shaking get there so that the train doesn't derail. There's all these mitigative measures and life-saving measures that come from that. And we want to empower the public more. Doing that required building resiliency into our network systems, working with our telco partners in the private sector to put resiliency and redundancy into the system, and upgrading our communications network statewide. So many things have happened, and we are, you know, we're now moving to, you know, we established this statewide camera network that is looking at for wildfires, driven extensively by wildfires, but it can do a lot of different things now. And we're moving them to AI cameras. So the AI could literally take all the data we're seeing with weather, wind, take the predictive analysis and focus on areas that could potentially be fire start areas. And then before the fire starts, and then the camera gets the first picture of it, and then it moves back to our command centers. And we have folks that are monitoring that. And then we can push that data out to the community. So we're doing some pretty phenomenal things. And of course, it's happening across the country. And I think that this whole issue of AI, and I just talk about the wildfire context, but if you think about AI helping emergency managers with a decision matrix, right? Being able to you know, have the ability, you know, particular scenario, it's not taking the place of humans making decisions, but it's prompting decisions that could help streamline and amplify and accelerate the effort of emergency managers. And that moves through the recovery process. You know, one area we worked on was implementing, or I would say integrating, our finance and admin folks into the incident management teams at the State Operations Center, right? So this whole concept where the recovery, we move into recovery, and that the documentation and the activities that happened in response were not in alignment with what was happening at recovery, we'd have to go back and rebuild those. We'd have trouble with FEMA in being able to do public assistance. Now, having the finance and admin people integrated in the management team, and through the response, they're building the playbook that will be moved into recovery, super streamlines that effort. And AI is a huge component of that now, of being able to ensure that those documents, those actions are consistent with what PA guidelines, FEMA guidelines, et cetera, will be in the long run. And the idea is to accelerate the pace of recovery and hopefully maximize your amount of financial recovery from our federal government.
Right. You mentioned something there about the earthquake warning scenario there and about trains and things like that. Having technology, because you did something there that had a mitigation effect on second and third order things like the train, right? Slowing the train down. These are things sometimes the human brain can pick up on, maybe the train, but then all of the other things that are being mitigated by that one warning, right? That it's amazing. I'm using technology to figure out what the true effects of those investments are. And that's a huge one. I mean, if it's just one train not derailed, that saves a lot of people, right? So let's cap this off with what I think is an emerging challenge for emergency management that we're seeing out there, and especially this year, it has really come to light. And that's this notion of disinformation, the notion that there are illicit actors out there that are trying to make things worse, if you will. And sometimes that's nation states. Sometimes that is disgruntled individuals, whatever it is. And I wrote a paper on this back in, I think it was 2012, about the cyber idea of what if we're fooled, right? What if the public is told to turn left to evacuate when they're supposed to turn right? You only have to fool the public once, and they're going to lose confidence in the government that told them to do that, right? Because it wasn't the government that told them to do it. How do you see this playing out? I mean, this is a really new one. It's something emergency management hasn't really had to focus on until recently. How do we combat that today? How do we make sure the right information is getting to the right people and that it's not being squandered by nefarious actors?
Well, I would just say it's a huge issue, and it's going to become more complex as time goes on. Social media, in general, you know, we've actually seen over the course of the last several years as social media became more prevalent, mis- and disinformation. But it has gotten to a level now where it literally can have an impact on the response and the public's perception. So you're 100% correct. And I think the COVID experience, our pandemic experience, played into that with regards to mis- and disinformation. You know, I think me growing up in the industry and coming up, we had preconceived notions that were kind of built into our psyche about, you know, the government's going to get up and give you a warning. You know, it's built around the best information, and you're going to take that information, you're going to act on it. That has been eroded, and that is a problem. I will tell you just from my side, while I was in my role, what we tried to combat that is, of course, we're emergency services and Homeland Security. And in our Homeland Security, we have a very robust state threat assessment system, intelligence folks. But we also have a very robust cybersecurity integration center, right? They don't sit over on the right-hand side and watch everything's happening on the emergency management side. They're integrated, right? So they're helping to be able to buffer mis- and disinformation from a social media perspective, a dark web perspective, bad information. But this gets back to this leaning forward issue, right? You can't wait for the phone to ring and then get engaged. By that time, you're already too late and you're behind the power curve on messaging. This is important to lean out forward and be able to frame the narrative in a way that builds confidence early on in the public that we are responding accordingly, right? We want you to do a certain kind of thing, right? And then you build on that with re-messaging, but you have to be accurate, right? Because there's going to be people that are going to try to erode your message and turn it over, and you have to have your act together to be able to effectively do that narrative, that narration. So framing that narrative, having the capabilities to buy down or buffer some of this misinformation, disinformation, and then working with your partners who are also responders to be on the same page with what's being said. This will become more and more of a problem because you know, we're in a period of our time where people put out what they feel, or you know, it's not based on anything. There's no authority around it. It's not rooted in science or professional actions, but people listen to those. And so you have to have your act together at the government level, and all your partners have to be on the same page, and you have to be able to control the narrative.
to modify your statement that you, one of your slogan that you use instead of one team, one fight, how about one team, one message, right?
Yeah, so, that's a 100%. I like that.
One team, one message. Well, listen, Mark, I want to thank you very much for your time today. And also thank you very much for your service to the state of California and being a national leader in the emergency management community. So again, thank you very much for your time. We greatly appreciate you being here.
Thanks, Ross. And thanks you for all your great service to our country. You're no slack yourself, my friend.
I appreciate that, sir.
Appreciate it. Yeah. Okay. Have a great rest of your day, folks. Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to the KPMG Emergency Management Dialogues podcast. Don't forget to subscribe for more enlightening episodes.